This is Molly Smith introducing our annual Bringing America Back to Life speaker series. At this annual event, we invite those on the front lines of the pro-life and family movement to come together for a convention dedicated to exploring the full spectrum of issues and challenges that confront us as we continue to fight for the sanctity of human life, to protect our God-given family structure. We trust you will be edified and encouraged as you listen to our fine roster of speakers who by their articulate, thoughtful, expert presentations eloquently defend the right to life. It is my pleasure to introduce to you Chris Faddis, founder and CEO of Solidarity HealthShare, and Brad Hahn, counselor and attorney at law with the same company. Solidarity HealthShare helps you to preserve the freedom of making your own healthcare choices. Their 2017 presentation topic is Restoring Faith and Freedom in Healthcare. The time is now.
Hi, thank you. I just wanted to do a quick introduction. I'm Kristen Varley. I've been here for this is my fourth year actually here. I am a pro-life activist, a conscience rights activist, and a First Amendment in general activist, Second Amendment too, but I'm not doing that role today. I found healthcare sharing, after years in the pro-life and religious freedom movement and, really at the onset of the ACA and said to myself, this is the only option for my family now, and have really, it's been a blessing to come to work with one of the ministries, and be able to take this message around the country that there are options. There are better ways, different ways of paying for our medical costs, mean that we can continue to respect our values and our beliefs. We can see the physicians and doctors and facilities that we want for the best care for our families. The bonus is, because we're sharing our costs as self-pay patients, we can pay a little bit less than what the insurance market demands. Finding Liberty HealthShare and being with them as they created the National Coalition of Healthcare Sharing Ministries, with a mission of bringing more options to the American community, has just been the gift of a lifetime for me. So I'm thrilled to kind of help us transition, after being here for a few years with Liberty, to present Solidarity HealthShare, which has its roots in the Catholic faith, has been created by some remarkable men, Brad Hahn and Chris Faddis, and others out in Arizona. And they're going to spend some time this morning explaining what their vision is. And we're thrilled to be here in Ohio today. All right, thanks.
Thank you. All right, I'll begin. And I'm excited. You know, we're nearly 5 years into this project as far as Brad and I go. And my name is Chris Faddis. I was one of the two people who basically felt compelled by the Holy Spirit to begin this effort of a Catholic health share. And we decided, well, who can we go to get guidance, advice, you know, friendly direction, and maybe some help legally. And so we called our friend Brad Hahn. And my experience with Brad is, which also has to do with why I felt called to this, was I knew Brad. We were on a parish council together many years ago, and then we maintained friendship. I moved away, went to the East Coast for a few years, and when I came back, he was one of the first people that I sat down and had coffee with and reconnected with, and he really, we became closer because my late wife at the time was battling stage 4 colon cancer, and Brad, as an estate planning attorney and someone who was constantly having to deal with end of life issues with his clients and friends and other people, Brad helped to mentor and guide me and lead me in those decisions, those difficult decisions about treatment and when to choose hospice care and when do you surrender. And I remember that conversation with Brad at one point. He said, Chris, there's a time when you have to recognize, you have to ask God whether or not it's time to surrender and know that the body is doing what it's going to do and you're going to allow that to happen. And I remember with tears, knowing in my heart of hearts that that's what the Lord was telling us. And Brad led me through that. And in the midst of that, we were, you know, 2.5 months before my wife died, we were praying a novena to the Holy Spirit for Pentecost Sunday. And one of my dear friends, Dr. John Ertley, and I were praying it together. My wife was praying it. And my wife and I were praying it for the intention of a book we were writing about her cancer journey and her faith during the journey and sharing her story of trust. And I thought that this novena was about this book. And the last day of the novena, Dr. Ertley, good friend, calls and says, and for some reason leading up to that, for the 3 months, 4 months before that, as we found out the provisions that HHS put out about the Affordable Care Act, especially the ones that were most concerning for us of faith, I kept having people call me, what are we going to do about this? And I'm like, I'm not in healthcare. I worked in restaurants, okay? I ran restaurants, I did marketing, I promoted movies, you know, I did social media consulting. It's not even a job, I made it up, you know? Why are you talking to me about healthcare? But healthcare was always in my heart of hearts, even as a young child, and I always felt like at some point, and so people would friends would call and say, what are we going to do? What are we going to do? We got together, and I'm not supposed to do this. And here on the last day of our novena, Dr. Ertley calls and we start talking about healthcare sharing. And is that the solution? And so we end up on page, we end up looking up, is it actually exempted? And I had looked into healthcare sharing before, right before Angela was diagnosed. I almost switched to another healthcare sharing ministry. And then she was diagnosed with cancer. And I looked into it and I didn't know if it was exempted. So I looked it up and I saw right there on page 327 was this narrow exemption for members of healthcare sharing ministries. And it defined what that meant. I skipped the part about having to exist before 1999. And I said, we can do that. Let's start it. And so we went to prayer and we went to Brad and we went to the bishop and we went to friends and we had no clue how we were going to do this. But the Lord for 4.5 years has provided and led our direction. It took a long time because the Lord made it very clear to us that in order to have a truly Catholic healthcare sharing ministry, we had to have our own exemption. We could not just partner with another organization and just resell their product. There were many ways the Lord showed us that. Some of those, kind of painful, I guess, in a way. Some awkward meetings and things and being called, all kinds of names other than Christian. And, but the Lord led us in every step to the next person who was going to get us further down that road. I'm going to tell one more story. When my wife was diagnosed with stage 4 cancer, the only option was chemo, and the doctors even said it's probably not going to work. She was every bit but dead. She really, truly was probably 2 months away from death. Maybe three. And I still remember on the 2 month anniversary of her diagnosis, weeping. Because I didn't think I'd see that day. And as treatments were failing, because there was nothing in conventional medicine that was working, was going to work for her. We went home to Phoenix to visit. And a friend said, I have some doctors I want you to meet with. I've already scheduled appointments for you. Well, thanks a lot. It's our vacation. We're not supposed to be in the doctor's office this week. And we went and we met with some advanced and alternative physicians who were doing all kinds of revolutionary treatments. And we loved everything they had to say. And they showed us case studies. And they showed us evidence-based materials to show what they could do for us. And as we left, I was broken because we didn't have the money to pay for that. And insurance, Sirzak wasn't going to pay for it. We had healthcare reform, but healthcare reform did not include these things that were truly saving lives. And so we left there, and I just said, well, Lord, I guess I could try to raise the money. We went back to Phoenix, and so we had a few things we had to do. We had to know where we were going to live when we came back. As we were getting on the plane, we went back to North Carolina. As we were walking on the jetway, I got a phone call. A family has given a house to you for 4 months so that you can come back for treatment. Beautiful house in Scottsdale, Arizona, worth $400,000, and they just let us have it for 4 months. No rent. Another call. And so I got home, and I wrote up a campaign online. And I said to Angela, we'll know if this is what God wants for us if by tomorrow we've raised maybe $5,000. 24 hours later, we had raised $10,000. Within 30 days, $35,000 online and another $60,000 in other ways. Her treatments were paid for. And I remember thinking how grateful I was and how it would be really great to set something up like this for other people in the future. And it wasn't until months later in this healthcare project that I went, oh, a sustainable model where people share each other's medical costs. People already invented this. I didn't have to do it. So we have a lot to talk about. Brad Hahn, I am incredibly grateful for because his leadership, his mentorship, his guidance, and his faithfulness to the church has been a great gift. If it weren't for Brad, I don't think we would be partnered with Liberty HealthShare, who has been a godsend to us in so many ways, in guiding us and leading us and mentoring us and supporting us and encouraging us and inviting us to this conference. Brad is a deeply committed Catholic who helped found Solidarity HealthShare. Brad doesn't like the term co-founder because apparently it's not canonically correct, but for all intents and purposes, he is a co-founder of Solidarity HealthShare.
Only here in the United States.
Okay, whatever. Co-founder. So, he helped found Solidarity HealthShare as a means for Catholic Americans to have an ethical and affordable way to pay for medical care costs. Brad is a Phoenix-based estate planning attorney who regularly consults on end-of-life issues as they relate to Catholic social doctrine. He's a bioethics certified attorney from the National Catholic Bioethics Center. He's an allied attorney with the Alliance Defending Freedom. He's an avid bourbon drinker and just a great guy. So I'm going to ask Brad to begin and share some of the vision. And then we're going to do this more Q&A style. So I will ask a few questions, and I'll also open it to you as well. So without further ado, Brad Hahn.
All right. Thanks, Chris. Chris. All right. Thank you, everybody. And thank you to Molly, too, for the invitation to be here. It was in our own little world in Phoenix, Arizona, I thought we had a pretty vibrant, robust pro-life movement. But coming out here to Cleveland sets a new standard, raises the bar for us. So I'm grateful to be here. And I do disagree with one thing that Molly said, that she's not a salesperson. I think her passion and her speaking of the truth makes her the ultimate salesperson. So you don't need any gimmicks, sales gimmicks. You do a great job just being yourself and proclaiming the truth of Jesus Christ. So it's an honor to be here. And thank you for Chris. Thank you for Kristen. Dale Bellis, who was supposed to be here with us today, he had to be out of town for a funeral yesterday, and all the traveling Dale, Mr. Bellis does, he got sick on us. So he sends his best, and so if you could include him in his prayers for a speedy recovery, because we have much work to do, not only here to spread the word of healthcare sharing ministries, but also to make sure us Christians are protected in the repeal and replace of the Affordable Care Act. Is that okay to say repeal and replace amongst people here? All right, so I'm just going to kind of outline some issues that as pro-life Christians we need to be thinking about in the healthcare debate, and it's not being discussed right now, all right? And then I'm going to talk just a little bit about conscience protection. And, you know, we talk about conscience protection. I'm going to show where there's actually a constitutional basis for this. And even there's constitutional protection in the companion case of Roe v. Wade I'm going to talk about. Then a little bit about the healthcare, what an authentic healthcare system looks like in the history of it. And then apply some social teaching of the church to some of the conversations we need to have in the repeal and replace. So I got about a two-hour conversation here we're going to get done in about 33 minutes. But please, if any questions, interrupt me. We'll have a side discussion. I think I know what people's interests are, but I always learn from gatherings like this to see exactly what we need to talk about. So the current debate right now, we hear rising health insurance premiums. In Arizona, premiums have gone up 116%. We hear about, you know, pre-existing conditions. We hear the discussion about repeal and replace the Affordable Care Act. We can't do it because we're going to have 20 million left uninsured. Well, at 20 million left uninsured, 11 million that went on government subsidies fully aboard on Medicaid program. So those are the issues we're talking about. But to me, the most critical issue that we're not talking about is the Affordable Care Act under President Obama accomplished one thing. Federal government hijacked health insurance. Period. Are we hearing any discussions? We're hearing little discussions about returning it back to the states, but all these bills that have been floated around in House the last week, it's all about the government solution. One of my favorite, so you agree with that? Okay, so just you can go ahead and interact with me if you like. It gives me energy. So, okay. And so one of my favorite presidents is President Ronald Reagan when he says, "Government is not the solution to the problem. Government is the problem." And I want to say that government is partly the problem because us as Christians, we've abrogated our moral authority over to an amoral healthcare system. We've turned and abrogated over our control from the doctor-patient relationship, from a third-party payer system. We have no idea how much it costs to get health services in this country. We've abrogated that to an insurance company. and or to the federal government. So I got a question for you. A group of people sitting in Health and Human Services that have no, I have no way to interact with them, how should they be determining how much I get reimbursed, you know, for my medical expenses at a local level? So there's a systemic problem there, all right? And so there's other things, too, I want to talk about. There's other things we need to be talking about as well is, and I'll just share a story with you, and Molly's heard this story, too, is one of my clients was 93 years old, and I get the call. He had an esophagus issue where the food was going down in his lungs and water's going in his lungs, and he was aspirating. And so a feeding tube, in my opinion, from an ethical standpoint, was a great solution to the problem. But that's not what happened. So I get a call 6 days. Bart has not been on food or water for 6 days. They're giving him little drops of water on the tongue to keep him comfortable. So I walk in, and sometimes I'm not as Christian as I should be when I confront doctors, but that's another side story in situations like this. But basically what happened is a non-Christian from the country of India came into the hospital and basically told my client, who's a Christian, Bart, this. Look at you, Bart. Your life's not worth living. Look at the burden you are to the medical system, to society, to your family. It's best for you just to go home and die. And so then I went in and challenged Bart, and I said, what's the doctor telling you? Well, he's saying I should just go home and die, and I can eat anything I want to. I can do anything we want to. And I said, okay, let's go. I'll drive you home right now. Get out of bed and walk. Let's go. And he just looked at me. I said, you don't have the energy even to do that. So the doctor says you can go home and live the rest of your life. You can't even get out of this bed. And then I start talking about, you know, what's proportionate or disproportionate, ordinary or extraordinary care. And I knew I had Bart when he came. And I was explaining to this about how it's a normal procedure someone his age to get a PEG tube in and how that could be a great benefit for him. And then when he said, darn it, I knew I had him at that point. I convinced him that he had a right moral decision to make. So he made a decision to put in the PEG tube. Put in the PEG tube, but since he was starved and dehydrated for 6 to 7 days now at this point, his body never restarted. All right? So people like Bart need our protection. Agreed? Yeah. And so, and that's something else. What's beautiful about healthcare sharing ministry is we're there to advocate for our members. And so when calls come into member services and we encounter something like that, that's when we can deploy people out there to be an advocate for our members. And another issue we see a lot in Texas is the 10-day futile care statute. I'm sure everybody's familiar with that, is where in the state of Texas, a doctor can say, your life's not worth living, care is futile. So you got 10 days, we're gonna start treating you. Not only start treating you, but dehydrate you and starve you to death. And that's in the state of Texas. All right? And so the other thing too is in California, so we're always talking about conscience issues, agreed? You know, at the federal level, and so we're going to get away with these and abolish some of these conscious issues at the federal level. We still have the 50 states we got to deal with. Agreed? So you're fighting that right here with the new organization you're founding here. California, it's in 2014, the California Department of Managed Health Care decided that abortion now is a basic health insurance. So, and there's no religious exemption of that, so abortions are provided in health insurance plans in the state of California. Even if you're a church, even if you're a religious organization. And so how can we, as Christians, run a church, a diocese, a Catholic church, a Catholic organization, and provide for abortion? You know, and why can we, as Christians, in the Catholic Church in particular, allow that to happen? So the other thing, too, is we all heard about you should know this by now, but I'm going to repeat it just to make sure we do. Is under the Affordable Care Act of Prevented Health Services. They include drugs like contraception, surgical sterilizations, and potential abortifacient drugs like the Plan B and the morning after. That's in there. And so this whole health care plan, the Affordable Care Act, was designed to get free birth control. And I'm sure a lot of people here have read Humana Vitae with Paul VI. And when I read through that about 10 years ago, I was like, this guy's crazy. What's he talking about that contraceptions are not going to be accepted, but the government's going to force you to pay for it? Remember that? How you predict the future? And I thought, now you look how prophetic that really is. And the battles we're in now where we're making religious organizations and nuns to pay for that. And so even to now, the state of Vermont is requiring assisted suicide and you can, and you have to refer, you have to refer, if you're a doctor, you don't want to do a physician suicide, you have to refer to a doctor who will do that for you. All right, so those are kind of the issues we have to look at, but the one of the most concerning to me too is with the Affordable Care Act, a half-baked proposal of a, let's half repeal it and half replace it. You know, because right now I read there's something like, you know, there's a few hundred taxes that are involved in the Affordable Care Act, but there's about 4,000 decisions that the Secretary of Health and Human Services can make on how to implement that. Just like we go back here to the state of Vermont, you know, in the state of California, that was some bureaucrat that made that decision to include abortion. You know, that wasn't a federal law or a state law that was passed. There's about 4,000 places where the Secretary of Health and Human Services can interject their atheistic, you know, non-Christian worldview into our healthcare system in the United States. So doing a half repeal and replace, and everybody's saying, okay, we got a great person here in Trump, he's going to undo all that. What about the next administration that comes in? You know, and something that really concerns me about Republicans in particular, sorry, I can just start bashing everybody. Is that okay, Mally? Okay. Yeah, and so I remember talking to one of my congressmen who was Republican in Arizona, and he says, Brad, we're putting in tens of millions of dollars of abstinence training into public schools this year under the Bush administration. Isn't this great? I said, no. And he looked at me, what are you talking about? And I said, now you got all this money earmarked for this. Now what happens when an opposite president comes in with an opposite worldview? They're going to replace that, and you paved the way for federal funding to do that. And so I said, we got to be thinking about stuff like this, especially on this border repeal and replace. Sorry if I get a little passionate here. Just excuse. All right. Is that okay? All right. Okay. So now, big thing we talk about was conscious protection. You know, and some people say, well, that's just a Christian concept, you know. And if you want to be part of a civil society, you must accommodate public accommodations and check your conscience at the door. Well, the last I checked from my reading of the Constitution, you know, we don't have a freedom from religion, you know, and it's not a private event. You know, it's us. We have to take our views out to the public workplace. And if anybody has any questions, just raise their hand, too. We'll have Chris field them for you. So even in the Declaration of Independence, we talk about that we hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed with their Creator with uncertain and inalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness. So with that, that's a principle of inherent human dignity. Agreed? Based on the teaching of the church. And so then, I love reading some of Thomas Jefferson's writings too, in particular when he says, no provision in our Constitution ought to be dearer to the man than that which protects the rights of conscience against the enterprises of the civil authority. So that's a sentence that you don't hear much about, quoted by Jefferson, but it's in the same letter that talks about freedom, you know, freedom of religion. That's what he's talking about here, but no one quotes that for this part of it. It's very selective quotes that you hear in the market. And then also, too, the Federalist Papers, James Madison says that conscience is the most sacred of all property. You believe he even rose that to the level of a property right under our Constitution. So one of my favorite one in doing research for this, too, is how in Roe v. Wade, everyone's heard of that case, but there was a companion case called Doe v. Bolton, which held that the right to abortion created in Roe v. Wade does not require participation by any person or entity who may object to abortion and is entirely appropriate to protect this conscience. Has anybody ever heard of that case before? You know, isn't that, you know, I didn't know that was existed until a couple years ago. All right? So that's kind of the big thing is, you know, we got to be talking about repeal and replace. We're going to be talking about in the conscience protections. And we can come back next year and give a more exhaustive religious liberty argument if you want to, Molly, but I'm running out of time already, so sorry about that.
Hey Brad.
Yeah.
Quick question for you. You talked about end-of-life issues. Yeah. So a lot of people are saying things like, well, we've got Trump now. They're replacing it. It's, you know, they're taking all those mandates out, so what's the big concern? Is the end-of-life, in your opinion, and what they're proposing, have they set protections at the end-of-life?
No.
I should have asked you a different question. You just said no. Okay, so, and another question, because I think Molly said this last night, you talked about how we cannot have exceptions, right? And I was really moved by that because I think we're always told you just got to get as close as you can to the line and just get a little bit this way and this way. And so in the repeal and replace, right. How firm do we, as committed Christians, Catholics, people in this pro-life movement, need to be in standing that we will not make exceptions? And if so, is this law that's being proposed this week by Speaker Ryan, are there exceptions in that, and should we be fighting against it?
Yeah, I would be fighting against it, and I'll get into some of the social teaching of the church on that, why we should be against that here in a second. But the big issue there, too, is the fundamental right. And, you know, the 10-day Feudal Care Act in the state of Texas, that was under George Bush when he was governor, signed that into law. And the other thing I have a problem with what George Bush did is when his Health and Human Services put out a great, not, I shouldn't say great, put out a document basically identifying what is wrong with the Medicare system in our country, and basically came to the conclusion that if 80% of everything we spend on Medicare, billions of dollars a year, is done within the last year of someone's life. So if we can shorten someone's life to a year before they die, we can save billions of dollars. That was the conclusion in that document. And then they brought in some other pro-death documents like the VA death book, you know, you've heard about in the past, and how we have to have death panels. That's all that came under the George Bush administration, which is shouldn't surprise us now what we see with his wife and children as well. But that's the kind of stuff we have to be very, very mindful of. And so that's the conversation that healthcare reform is. Once we have out of control, well, I'm going to answer that a little differently, I think, because one of my friends says, if you ask the wrong questions, you always get the wrong answers. Is that fair enough? We're asking the wrong questions. You know, so how do we control end-of-life issues? You know, how do we control an outrageous medical system that we can't control the cross? It's very simple. The Catholic social teaching of subsidiarity. You know, where they talked about the principle of subsidiarity is societal problems can be best solved by those that are most affected at the lowest possible level of government and control. So who's making healthcare decisions? Do you think it's the patient and the doctor anymore? So if we can restore that, that could be a huge issue, number one. All right? But then we have to make sure I have the right to go select the doctor I want to. So that with my friend Bart, we fired that doctor and said, we do not want an atheistic worldview coming in and infecting my client. And so I was the one that broke the news to the guy, you know, proudly. Try to do it in charity, but sometimes I have little issues with that. So so that's the first issue, is have the patient have more control of the decision, have the doctor more control of the decision. The other thing we're not talking about is the third-party payer system. And so when you have... So when you have somebody else determining the price, and I'll give it just a quick example. My son's a big basketball player in Arizona, so he's playing in a basketball tournament today. So with him, he got kicked in the calf, he got a deep calf bruise. And so it took about a month for the blood, you know, to drain out. And then by that time, he had to start rehabbing it because he lost some muscle strength in there, so he wouldn't re-injure. So my wife, we're on Solidarity Health Share, of course. And so Julie went in and said, what's your best cash pay price? I want you to help my son here. $80 a visit, that's the cash price. Okay, and Julie says, done, bill this through Solidarity, and we'll make sure you get compensated for that, for the services. So they looked at this card that we have for Solidarity, and they said, oh, this is just like insurance. So how much do you think they billed Solidarity? On an average of $290 a visit.
$337. Was the biggest average, one that I denied. One? Just kidding.
Yeah, it was about 290. So Julie, my wife Julie called and said, hey, what are you doing here? We're a Christian organization. You know, you're out of control. You know, it's amoral for you to do this. Bill Solidarity to the $80. Yes, Julie. Hung up. So just by that right there is look at what Julie just did. She challenged the system, an amoral system. She knew what the costs were going to be. Why was she fighting for that? She was fighting for that because because she was paying for it. But not only she was paying for it, but the ministry, our community was paying for that. And so she knows if I can make a 30-second phone call and get this off my mind, because Julie always she always wants to stay in her mind. We're a lot in similar first boards, right? And so at that point, that 30-second phone call, now we have over $2,000 available for other members in our community to share medical expenses. So what's the best way? Elective procedures in this country? Eye surgery. you know, cosmetic surgery that's not covered by traditional insurance, those have not gone up in the same rate, you know, as that. So if we can return back to a cash-based system, and we can abolish the billing department in all of these, which is, I've been reading some places, it's up to 60% of the overhead for a doctor, the billing department. Yeah.
Just to illustrate your point, yeah. I had elective eye surgery 5-6 years ago, 10 years ago. The doctor told me what it was going to cost. I had to put a lens implant in. He said the whole procedure is going to cost you about $1,800. Procedure's done, the hospital, and all of the different various expenses. He sent me a bill for $9,800. The doctor says, well, we're probably going to have to sue him. Sue him? What's he talking about? Sue him. You gave me a price, here it is. You go work it out with them guys. Well, it's not that easy.
Yeah.
So, I think I ended up paying $500. Yeah. Don't ask me how.
Yeah.
They play the game. Let's let they start high and see if they can settle for somewhere
right.
higher than what I was originally.
I agree. And you know, they play a different game between the doctor, or like a big hospital system, and the insurance company. I was surprised about this. The Wall Street Journal is getting some pretty good articles on the healthcare reform, repeal and replace debate. You know, so I thought they would do the same thing. You know, the hospital would go to the insurance company. We had, like in Arizona, to get a knee replacement, the cash price is $17,000, but they bill the insurance $45,000. I got a friend who's an orthopedic surgeon. So you would think that the doctor's office would negotiate with the insurance company. All right, let's do it for 20. They block discount. So they'll say, okay, this hospital provider goes to the insurance company. We have $2 million worth of expenses, medical expenses, you know, from a 30 cent or $30, you know, piece of aspirin, you know, prescription aspirin, you know, to a knee replacement surgery, you know, to open heart surgery, and the bill comes to $10 million. Insurance company, what will you take? You know, and it's a negotiation back and forth. So the hospital is going to say, we want $10 million for all these groups of bundled services that we've provided, but they'll come back, we'll give you $8 million. So the insurance company is not even doing an honest discount. So that's what gets me going. Question?
I had a similar experience. I had a big bill from Cleveland Clinic, and I said, I haven't even noticed. I said, well, what did they do for this? So I called them and I said, please give me an itemized breakdown of where you came up with this money. And all of a sudden, the bill went away. They charged me maybe 20%
yeah.
of what they had sent. So
is it?
Oh, she's on to us.
Yeah. Is it too much to ask in a free market society that we don't live under anymore to see what value do I get for a particular procedure? Is that too much to ask for? You know, in our society, especially in our medicals, those are the questions we need to be asking. And so these are the questions we've been asking representatives in D.C. about this too. And the other big thing too, I didn't want to talk about this, but I will, is tort reform. Is why can't we get authentic tort reform in the United States? That drives up medical costs. So how many times have you been to a doctor? I've been to the doctor a few times where, you know, they'll say, well, we want to do this, this, and this. Why? Well, because you could, then I ask the question, what percent of chance do you have that I have this issue? Oh, it's about 10%. Why are we doing it then? Is there other tests we can do? You know, and it's a CYA world. And especially the problem I have when I go into the hospital or my kids go in the hospital is once they find out an attorney, you know, then they really get cautious. So that's kind of the difference. Those are the questions we need to be asking. So conscious protection. Third-party payer system, how can we can get rid of that and restore that and try to see exactly what medical bills are costing? And how do we build a community like Solidarity and Liberty to pay for one another's medical expenses? And how can we play a part in that to make sure we get the best possible costs? That's how we can take back control not only of our care, but also the costs of our system and protect our consciences as well. So, and there's one thing I was going to say too is Bishop Vasha, a great man, Bishop of Santa Rosa, he talked about time and time again the church and the laity is challenged, particularly in the healthcare arena, to abandon her moral principles in order to be allowed to serve in the public arena. So time again, we're asked by the church is asked to abandon or moral principles to be allowed to serve in that. Well, last time I checked, the Catholic Church and the Christians were the ones that created healthcare, just like the educational system in the world. And so we've had an incredible opportunity, you know, in how the natural moral laws evolved, with bioethics how it's evolved, you know, and how, and I do a lot of end-of-life teaching. And that's what I love about the teaching of the Catholic Church, is because it's so well documented and well defined. And so in my legal practice, I do a lot of counseling on living wills and healthcare power of attorneys. And I'm amazed at all the Christians who aren't Catholic follow the teaching of the Catholic Church on end-of-life issues, because it makes sense. So this is a body of natural law, of teaching of the Church on morals and bioethics that we've created. Now we're asked to abandon that in our society just so we can serve. And so the first Catholic hospital was found, the first hospital in the United States was founded by religious sisters down in New Orleans and such. And right now, today, the Roman Catholic Church is the largest non-government healthcare provider in the world and the largest private provider in the United States. So how did we get here where we have Catholic institutions, Catholic hospitals? I know there's two in the United States now that can't even call themselves Catholic, you know, because the bishop removed the Catholic status of them, two different bishops. When did we lose our way in healthcare? When did we abandon our Christian tradition? And I can tell you when it started, you know, especially in this whole concept of healthcare sharing ministries. You know, that's originally a Christian concept. You know, the charity, come in and take care of one another's brother. We're our brother's keeper. And make sure everybody in the Christian community is taken care of. But as a church, we abandoned that, you know, when insurance started coming back in the 1940s and 50s to be attached to an employer. And then the church was the first one to abrogate that to a third party. And so now you got all these battles within the church. We didn't have to have these battles if we would have taken our personal responsibility. That's why it's a blessing to be here today. Is and I'll just kind of give you a quick history of where we came from. Is by the grace of God, we found Liberty Health Share and Dale Bellis and Kristen and everybody to teach us Catholics what we abandoned many years ago. So that's a great blessing that Dale and them has basically said, come on board, brothers. We're going to show you how to do this the right way. And then we said, but Dale, we don't have an exemption because you have to be in existence prior to 99, right? So we found this beautiful little Mennonite church outside of Columbus, Ohio, and we had a meeting with them. You'll love this. So I sat down with the board of elders. Brad, what do you personally believe in stem cell research? And I said, it's irrelevant what I personally believe. I said, it's what Jesus Christ taught through his church. That's what I believe on stem cell research. And I said, now, are you talking about embryonic stem cells or adult stem cell research? There's a difference. And so then we went through all these bioethical issues for the next couple hours. And this board of elders from this little great Mennonite church said, that's exactly what we believe. And I said, isn't this beautiful? I said, the Catholics and the Mennonites have not agreed on anything, have not partnered on anything since the Protestant Reformation. But we have something we have common ground on, right? Moral and ethical beliefs as it relates to our bodies, to healthcare, to family. We can, as Chris and I are learning so much about family, about community, through this great little Mennonite church. And so then they said to us, consider this a gift. You Catholics abandoned healthcare sharing ministries in the 1910s, 20s, 30s in this country. Consider this a gift from this little Mennonite church through Chris and Brad to the Catholics, so all Catholics in the United States have the opportunity to participate in healthcare sharing ministry. So that's the story, why, how we got the exemption. So with the Mennonite Church and with Liberty, it's a beautiful partnership, ecumenical. We're coming together, you know, and learning from each other, you know. And I think that, too, is sometimes, I know I get very prideful in many areas of my life, but one in particular is about the teaching of the Church. We know how to do everything right. But we can learn so much from our Protestant brothers and sisters on community and on health sharing, so...
Hey, Brad, let's... Yeah.
So we got to be humble enough to receive that. So.
Amen. And I want to jump to questions, and I think we'll finish up. There's a couple more points I know you want to make, and we'll probably get to questions.
I haven't
even
got to church teaching yet, so...
Oh, boy. Well, we'll be here until tomorrow, so...
Maybe next week.
Yeah, you had a question here, and then we'll go here.
You know, I think everybody in the room here is down with what your message is and everything, but, you know, I know we're running out of time, and I'm wondering, do you have a blueprint? Is there a plan? Do you have something that...
demonstrable that that's available and working, and you can share kind of like benefits. And philosophically, we're in.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I had to get you this point first.
We're there. We're working.
Yeah.
So what is Solidarity is an operational healthcare shared ministry, and so basically what medical cost sharing is, and Solidarity in particular, it's a national, not for profit, you know, missionary organization that helps facilitate the sharing of members' medical expenses. That's how we do it. And so to give an example, my monthly contribution that I give to Solidarity for my family of four is $449 a month. So it comes in through a credit card, so we can get airline miles, right? Comes in, and then once it hits the computer system at Solidarity, it's assigned to another member. So if Chris has a need that month of $1,000, my $449 may be assigned to Chris's share box and allocated to him, and then another member's would go there and a little bit more. Then at that point, Solidarity would then issue a check to the provider or to reimburse Chris if he paid for the medical costs out of his pocket. So that's how it facilitates through our online system to do that.
And Brad, kind of globally, so obviously understanding healthcare sharing, the idea that we contribute a monthly amount, like Brad is saying, we share in one another's medical expenses. And you know, it's the old method of, right, the pot goes around and we give more to those who need it and those who don't give more, you know, all that. But we have a set plan for that. It's not just like what I had to do, which was, hey, can you guys help us out? Which was very humbling and embarrassing and all of that. And what was amazing is there would be somebody who would give us $5 and, right, and they'd say, I'm so sorry, I can't give more. And literally the next person would give us $1,000, right? That's the beauty of it. But we've set a more sustainable system for that. But with that, how do we kind of in the long-term vision, without compromising to the third-party system, and I think what you're kind of asking is, how do we take that model and the 30,000+ doctors who profess themselves as Christians or Catholics or people of faith and build our own authentic Christian healthcare system?
Is that okay? We go that direction?
Is that all right? That's all the right direction you're going. Yeah.
So we do have a payer system in place with Solidarity and with Liberty to pay for members' medical expenses. But now it's going to come down to, can doctors even practice medicine in this country anymore with the conscience issues that are coming down on them? So one solution is to have, and there's a couple institutions, the Catholic Medical Association in particular is looking at this, is how do we build a network of pro-life Christian doctors that have the same worldview that we have and that they can abandon traditional insurance and then they can pick up and do a cash pay system or work with healthcare sharing ministries to facilitate the payment of medical costs. Not only that, but their overhead would drop by 60%. Right, and they don't have to fight with insurance companies. And they don't have to fight with conscience issues anymore. They can be more selective and serve Christ. So that's where we want to get to, and healthcare sharing ministries is a great payer model to fulfill that. And so that's the. And then also we're working now with some other organizations to bring whole hospitals over to abandon the system. You know, and this is a lofty goal. You know, so I appreciate prayers and fasting for us. So in any religious order you can get praying for us, we can. So
good questions. I know the gentleman back here, you had double hands. Go ahead.
No, you don't. We're considered a Catholic ministry or a ministry that's faithful to teaching the church is because we follow the ethical and religious directives of the United States Conference of Catholic Bishops. And that document is how hospitals should be providing services that are pro-life in this country. That's all it is. But the problem with the ethical and religious directives, it's a form of ethical minimalism. You know, in my opinion, the ethical and religious directives are the minimum baseline. We need to far exceed those. Give you an example. Can't provide abortions in Catholic hospitals, even though it's happening on a daily basis in this country. Solidarity gets a call. You know, my teenager is pregnant. You know, what do we do? Well, where do you live? You know, we live in Phoenix. Right there, we got crisis pregnancy centers lined up for them. We got Maggie's Place after the baby's born. So that's going beyond the ethical minimalism. We have to reach out with the love and truth of Jesus Christ in our ministry, right? And that's what we aim to do. And the other thing you have to comply with is with the moral teaching of the church, is the Dorset Confession of the Mennonite Church, which is very similar to the profession of faith. And so it's another place where the Mennonites and the Catholics agree on. So we're going to unify as an ecumenical community around that. So.
And now your scenario there in Phoenix.
Yeah.
You got the Price of Pregnancy Center. You got the, I remember the second item.
Maggie's Place, yeah.
And Maggie's Place. But you have St. Joseph's right there.
In Phoenix?
Yeah.
You're referring to St. Joseph's, which lost their Catholic designation because of allowing an abortion. Yeah.
Right.
I was not aware of that.
Yeah, the bishop revoked their Catholic status about 3 years ago. Maybe about 5 years ago now. Because of a forced abortion issue. And many other issues that aren't public. But
now, how do we, as a marketplace, I would say that part of how you're going to achieve what you're going to achieve as someone who actually works for Dignity Health is that you have to build an audience, or should I say a customer base,
right,
where the folks up in California will say, you know what, there's enough people between the Roman Catholics and the Evangelicals in the Metro Phoenix area that we have to take into account their desires in these areas.
Mm-hmm.
You're exactly right. And I'm going to leave with this because I'm out of time. And we can continue the conversation in the hallway. So. It's a little too early to start drinking bourbon, but we can wait till the afternoon to do it. But I just want to leave you with this, is just like in the pro-life movement, you know, that slide, that survey up there that said 80% of the people that were polled have a problem with the leadership and how it's viewed, is if you're looking for the church to solve our problems, if you're looking for a pope or the Vatican to solve our problems, you're mistaken. And the teaching of the church is, we are co-responsible for our church. I'm just as responsible for my church as my bishop, Bishop Olmsted, is. Agreed? And so I'm going to collaborate with my bishop and with the bishops of the United States, but I'm going to try to lead them. And like what you're saying here, too, is if we create a system where the bishops have to listen to us, because the lay people are demanding this, number one, and if Dignity Health, if we could restore Dignity Health to a truly authentic Catholic institution, just because the laity and the populace are demanding it, we got to change the culture. This is a huge paradigm shift. Not only on healthcare sharing ministries where people are personally responsible for the financial obligations of healthcare, but how are we going to change the people in the pews, the lay people that need are going to demand a change? So we need a lot of help. And thank you for volunteering to help us.
Yeah. All right. I'm going to just leave you with one scripture. Molly, you can come up so that way you can take the mic right from me. Page 327 of that 1,500-page bill was the exemption for healthcare sharing ministries. John 3:27 tells us, no one can receive anything except what has been given him from heaven. We as Christians were praying for the solution, and it was on page 327. No one can be given anything except what has been given him from heaven. So we need to trust in the Holy Spirit, and we need to call our brothers and sisters, Christians and Catholics, out and say, stop abrogating your responsibility, be a part of this, and we will change this. Bring the doctors along with us. Get them out of the HMOs, because on page 327, God gave us the answer. Amen. Thank you, Molly.
And those of you that I spoke to outside in the hall and said you had to come in and listen to this, now you understand why. This is so key to what we are doing here at Bringing America Back to Life. This is a grassroots, bottom-up approach to the problems we have. I am so grateful to this organization. Honestly, I'm so grateful to you. I can tell you a personal story I heard about. I actually got involved with Kristen, as she said. She's been coming for a couple of years, but I really sat down with her last year and started talking about this. And my daughter is got two little children. Her first baby, when her first little child was born, it cost them $2,500. At that point, it was before Obamacare. After Obamacare, she had another child. It cost them $10,000. They're on a very, very small. They don't have a lot of money. It took them at least 18 months to pay off their bill for little Charlie. I told her about Liberty Health Share, and she said, "Oh, Mom, yeah, that's nice. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. It's just not going to work for us. It's just not going to work for us." I said, and so, sure enough, she called Kristen. She is now pregnant with her third child because she was so concerned about how much it was going to cost her. It was had not gone down from the 10,000. It was going to be up from the 10,000. She is now registered with Liberty Health Share. So this is a personal thing for me. When I see this affecting my own family and I see it working, wow, this is amazing. So we are hoping to partner much more with Solidarity. Yes.
Yeah. One last thing on top of that too with Solidarity Health Share is it's eligible for sharing among member expenses, a one-time reversal of vasectomies and tubal ligations. So how can we restore the body how it was created to be?
You've been listening to Chris Faddis, founder and CEO of Solidarity Healthshare, and Brad Hahn, counselor and attorney at law with Solidarity Healthshare, and 2017 presenters at the Bringing America Back to Life convention.